Welcome home. We are WNST, Tessa Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are into a new week, and what a week it's going to be around here if Mike Elias has begun this thing. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road, all of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare. Luke Jones was at the ballpark all weekend. He's going to be out in Owings Mills all week. Luke, it's an incomplete project at this point. Obviously, between trades and not trades, stars and not stars, or perceived blue chip prospects, team's not playing great baseball right now. And I don't even know where to jump on Eflin or any of these deals and just say they're not playing great baseball. You sort of sounded the alarms a week ago, 2 weeks ago, over the course of this 5 or 6 week body of work. This has been really rough sledding. It's something that I don't know that we, in May and June, we thought, well, they could hit the rocks. This is, you know, they're stuck on the rocks right now. And this is a really weird time to have this trading deadline happen, man.
I mean, they definitely are. I mean, you can't sugarcoat struggles when they last for a month. At the same time, it's baseball, man. And you know this. And how many times over the last, you know, any time the Orioles have been good, which has been few and far between, but there have been some times, how many times have we cited over the years that the 1983 Orioles, for example, had 2 7-game losing streaks, right? It happens. You don't like it when it happens. It feels like it's the end of the world when you're in the middle of it. I think we all would agree, even as presently constructed, they are better than how they've played over the last month. But as it pertains to the standings and concerns for where you're going as a ball club and some of the injuries they've had, certainly on the pitching side, how can you not be concerned? You know, when you're talking about a team that has gone 13-18 over its last, 5 weeks, now a little over a month at this point in time, and they have a minus 44 run differential over that time. It's not as though it's been unlucky with one run losses, things of that nature. It's been pitching struggles, offensive struggles. The defense has been bad compared to how it's been the first 3 months. And that for me is one of the more alarming things. You know, you're going to go through struggles. You're going to have times where you don't pitch as well. You're going to have times when you don't hit as well. But typically, at least in terms of perception, your defense should stay more consistent. And it hasn't been. Now, I don't think that means that they're just a bad defense moving forward, but they have to get better in that way. And we still see them make spectacular plays. Sunday, a great example. Cedric Mullins with one of the best catches of his career in a game-saving situation in the top of the eighth inning. Gunnar Henderson makes an amazing play early in the game, but we've seen him have some errors here in recent days where it feels like he's trying to do a little bit too much. I mean, certainly this team's pressing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think if you listen to Brandon Hyde's post-game press conference on a daily basis, you get an idea for that. So it's just, you got to plug your way through it, and you got to find your way out of it. And I think they will. If I could say one thing, Nestor, and I kind of had this epiphany over the weekend, I don't know when it's going to pay off for them, and I'm not saying it's going to result in a deep October run this year or a World Series this year, but I do think this last 5 weeks is going to help this team in a big picture sense from the standpoint of just how well things had gone for them overall over the last 2 years, right?
For all these young players, there's been very little struggle in that way. Yeah. The way the fans have struggled. These players don't know from the Austin Hayes does. He's in Philadelphia. He ain't struggling no more. But for the most part, these young guys, it got good and it stayed good. And despite all the pitching and losing Brad, losing all of that, and I just feel like it's adding up, as well as the heat of the summer. And then as well as, just to your point, Gunnar Henderson's getting a reputation for not being a good defensive player at this moment and piling up air. Like, that's weird. That was something I would not have had on my dance card in May, because speed and defense don't take a day off usually.
Yeah. Sure. And again, you look at the nature of the plays. I think more often than not, it's him trying to do too much, you know. And look, he made a spectacular play early in Sunday's game, and you see that kind of play. And we've seen him make that play so many times. But at the same time, there is, and the ninth inning was a good example of this. Sometimes put the ball in your pocket, right? Sometimes you live to fight another day, and that's what's going to happen on that front. So, I mean, but the overall point I was trying to make just a moment ago was, I do think they are going to be better for what they're going through right now in a big picture sense, because you go through adversity. You know, we talked about this very early, maybe not early in the season, but certainly in the off season. And we were talking about the Houston Astros, putting the trash cans and the cheating part of it aside, but going back to where they were in, say, 2015, and then going and looking at 2016, where they took a step back. You know, they had some injuries and they didn't play as well and they missed out. And so we've talked about a lot of times with development of individual players, how it's not linear. Team development is not always linear as well. So that's where I was saying, I do think in a big picture sense, and look, it might be next year, it might be the year after that. I do think what they've gone through over the last 5 weeks is going to make them better in a long run, in the long run perspective. But when you're in the midst of it, when you're going through it, it's rough, but because you everything you are doing, you begin to question. And you know, you mentioned Gunner's defense. I mean, how about the fact that Adley Rutschman's been their worst hitter over in the month of July? He's been awful. I mean, 120 awful, 125 awful,
Well,
whatever it is. You
Mountcastle
know.
on top of that not hitting the ball either.
Sure. Well, I mean, and lots of guys. I mean, the reality is what Anthony Santander has tried his best to carry them over the month of July, but you know, I mean, even Gunner, who hasn't been awful at the plate, but it's been a down month for him. Jordan Westberg, same thing for him, although certainly he's had his share of big hits. But you know, none of these guys have had their absolute best month in the month of July. So it adds up. And then you talk about the pitching questions and the rotation and the bullpen. I mean, it's, you know, it really adds up and you start to question everything about it. I said it a few minutes ago. We know this team has a much longer track record, even if you're taking into account, yeah, no Bradish and no John Means, no Tyler Wells, no Danny Coulomb. Even if you take all of that into account, this team still has a really long track record of being way better than they've been over the last month. So that's where it's alarming. Now, that being said, take a look at where they were when they finished up that series in the Bronx back in late June. When everyone thought that they were the best team in baseball and they were up to 24 games over 500, they had just beaten the Yankees in a series. They had just beaten the Phillies in a series. They were actually in second place at that point in time still, albeit I think it was a half game out or whatever it was. So even in going 13 and 18 over their last 31 games, and even as ugly as it's looked, they're still better off in the standings than where they had been. So that's not an excuse, or that's not to say everything is fine and they're going to be okay in every single phase that we just talked about. But it does give the perspective of as bad as things have gone for them over the last 5 weeks, they're in no worse shape from a divisional standpoint. And look, I mean, Cleveland, okay, we could talk about them as well in addition to the Yankees, but the Astros certainly have surged, but the Orioles are still right there, even in terms of still potentially earning the number one seed and home field advantage in the American League. So that's where you have to look at this from the standpoint of, okay, yes, they need to clean things up at the micro level, day-to-day basis, but at the macro level, from the 30,000-foot perspective, they're still in really good shape. And, you know, they've added Zach Eflin, they've added Sir Anthony Dominguez. We're going to see what happens here over these last couple of days leading into the trade deadline, and you know, whether they're going to move a couple more major league players in addition to Austin Hayes, or whether it's going to be prospects or some combination of both. I did like seeing Mike Elias jump the market a little bit in terms of some of the deals that have been made since then for some of the bullpen pieces. Some teams have paid quite a bit, whereas I think the Orioles, with what they've paid to this point in terms of who they've given up, not that Sir Anthony Dominguez is the best reliever on the market, and not that Zach Eflin's going to be the absolute best starter dealt, but I think they did do well for themselves. Time's going to tell, right? I mean, we've talked about this. Some of the best trades out there that are made at the deadline on a yearly basis end up not working out, and some of the less heralded trades that no one really talks about end up really paying dividends. So, but beyond that, beyond the trade deadline, yeah, they just have to, the guys they have, you know, the guys in that clubhouse have to start getting back to where they were in June and May and April and all of 2023, because they've been that good for that long that they have a track record. There's no reason to think that this is who they are now, right? I'll still bet on the much longer, or the much bigger sample size of them playing better baseball, but got to get back to it. And you know, some of that might be that, hey, Sir Anthony Dominguez has pitched in the postseason, and you know, he understands how that works. Same with Zach Eflin. So they've brought in a couple veteran guys, and we'll see if they bring in anyone else that has some postseason perspective and experience to say, hey, we're okay, guys. This is all right. You know, we were with the 2022 Phillies who fired their manager earlier in the season, and we ended up in the World Series that October. So it's a reminder that, no, the goal is not to go to just win 100 games and be the number one seed. That doesn't assure you of anything, and the Orioles understand that. But they do need to start playing better baseball, and it was nice to avoid a sweep on Sunday, but nothing they're doing right now feels easy. And when you're in that kind of space, it can be a grind going to the ballpark. And even Sunday's win was an absolute grind as they nearly blew another 6-0 lead for the second time in the last week.
Luke, you can imagine as the guy who's not in the locker room, the guy who's been kicked out, that when Austin Hayes goes to Philadelphia and starts popping off about problems, this is exactly why Jennifer Grandal and Greg Bader and the Whistler don't want people like me around, because the stories don't come out when there's only you and three other people there and you're only in the locker room some of the time and everybody's sitting around the manager is Rocco Baco or Kevin Brown or employees. Like, that's never going to be reported, that anyone is disgruntled, that there's a problem, that there's clubhouse issues. Sounds like there's clubhouse issues. Sounds like that crowd in the outfield that we talked about so much creates bruised feelings. I've been around the sport 35 years, most of it on the inside. That's pretty typical, because somebody's coming to take in my job. I mean, Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson were not simpatico when Lamar was taking Joe's job. So there's that. Then there's losing. Then there's going someplace else and saying, it wasn't the happy little village over there that we saw on Masson. It was probably a little bit more like what Kevin Brown went through last year. And we only found out about that once he was off the air for 3.5 weeks and somebody popped off and it wasn't him. So this gets into, if this were a different, if this were the Mets clubhouse, if this were in a different place with different media, different stories would happen. It never happens in the Banner. It never happens at the Sun. They're all beholden and, quite frankly, neophyte when it comes to covering sports for 20, 30 years to get into the tentacles of all that. I don't think it's possible anymore, but I do think when it happens and when we're witnessing guys losing their jobs, there's going to be friction, bro. There's going to be.
I mean, there's going to be friction, but
even when you're winning,
but correct me if I'm wrong. What did Austin Hayes say that he popped off? I heard the comments, the comments that I've seen fans.
Just
run
we're
with
just in a better, in a better place. He said, right. I'm in a place where I can still win.
He
the World
said
Series.
That I have an even, that I think I have an even better chance of winning a World Series here. Who has a better record? The Philadelphia Phillies, who has a better roster, more complete starting rotation, better bullpen. And, you know, we can debate the offenses, the Philadelphia Phillies. What did he say wrong? I think, and I'm not saying you, Nestor, because it's, I think this is a lot of conjecture on social media. Look,
well,
beyond,
if they were winning right now, if they were 18 and 13,
sure, but
that
I think, but I think we're
up, right.
But I think we're trying to conjure a story that may or may not be there. Where's the evidence? I didn't hear anything, Austin. I had no problem whatsoever with what Austin Hayes said. First of all, the Orioles traded him. So this idea that Austin Hayes badmouthed the Orioles is nonsense. I heard the comments that he made. He made a comment that was complimenting his new team, which has a better record than the Orioles, has played better baseball than the Orioles, has a more complete starting rotation and bullpen than the Orioles. I didn't hear him trash the team whatsoever. So,
and he kind of knew he was getting dealt, right? I mean, it almost sounded like he's like, you can deal me.
I think he knew it's possible.
These are all young guys. Most of these guys haven't been dealt, right? Most of these guys.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And look, I mean, again, I heard the comments and I'm, you know, some of the stuff I saw over the weekend, I'm like, where's this coming from? It would be news to me. And look, just in the general sense, the common sense notion of you've got a crowded roster. Sure. Does that mean that it's a dysfunctional clubhouse and guys aren't getting along and things of that nature? That would be news to me. And look, I mean, if someone wants to show me a definitive report suggesting that something is awry, then fine. But I've just, this feels like it's been more a game of telephone over the weekend where, some fan mentioned something that Austin Hayes said, and then the next guy says, oh, well, that, he seemed disgruntled and he seemed to imply that things were problematic. I'm not sure that that exists. They're struggling.
He didn't seem unhappy to leave. Maybe that was the issue, and that was because
Well,
of
he
at
wasn't
bats. And
playing.
right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, yeah, right. So from that standpoint, I mean, I just think I think everyone, and myself included here, because I've been at a loss with some of what we're seeing, but at the same time, it is baseball. I think we're reaching for reasons why this is happening without acknowledging that sometimes these things do just happen. And it's why baseball is
I'll tell
the
you why it's
ultimate
happening. They don't
day-to-day.
have Bradish. They don't have Means. The bullpen's
It's part
falling
of it.
apart. Like,
Those guys
they're
don't swing the
tired.
bat, though.
It's summer.
Yeah.
The other teams are good too. Like all of that. So I'm not as down. I don't believe they're a 13 and 18 team. I don't believe they're a
Sure.
sub five. I think they're a very good team. But I think this is when the gut check happens, and when some of those football teams that start the year 7-2 become 7-5. Some of them end the season 8-9. You know what I mean? Because the Tampa Bay Rays last year, you're falling and you can't get up. You start to lose. I don't think there's any institutional DNA here that anyone remembers. They're getting rid of the guys that were losing, like Austin Hayes. And I mean, most of these guys only know winning, and they're young, and they only know that in the big leagues, and they don't know from everybody getting tapped on the clubhouse and seeing how different the clubhouse is going to be next week than it was last week, and how different Mike Elias wants to make it, and then how many bullpen guys and how many guys on the fringe of the rod, the Uriases and those guys, Mateo now injured, but how much it's going to change, how much that 24, 25, even getting into a month from now, they're going to expand, whatever those numbers are. Those are my guys, and there's
Yeah.
an organizational part of being young and coming up where you recognize everybody. I would preach calm. I would say, chill out, let the new guy pitch a little bit, get through the doublehead, get through the week, and stay in first place. I mean, that would be psychologically, they get swept here this week and wind up and say that's a psychological thing. They don't wake up in first place anymore. But this is. This is where the book gets interesting. If they win a
Yeah.
super or win a Super Bowl, win a World Series, this is where the book gets interesting.
No, I agree with you 100%. And again, I was pushing back not at you, but just that general chatter that's been out there over the weekend where I'm just like, where is this coming from? Like, I don't see I took nothing of that from Austin Hayes. I took it from Austin Hayes wasn't playing, wasn't really performing at a very high level, didn't have anything negative to say. If we're going to sit here and try to, and when I say we're, I don't mean you and me. I just mean anyone who's connected to the Orioles in any way, fan, media, whatever. If we're going to sit here and interpret him saying, I think I have an even better chance. He didn't say, I now have a chance to win a World Series. He said, I have an even better
He
chance to win the World
seemed
Series.
excited to be
As he
gone.
should be. As he
Yeah, he
should.
seemed
Well,
excited to be gone. And that's not
I.
exactly the way we conjured up in Maine. We're trying to get him at bats and try to get him out of a slump.
Yeah.
But because you and I talked last week, these guys are going to get tapped on the shoulder. Like we knew, talk about Trey Mancini, a couple, I go back to BJ Surhoff crying, right? Like
Right.
these guys are going to get tapped on the shoulder, and it's going to change things. And how it changes things when they're winning, that you like, hey, don't fix what's not broken, right? It
Yeah.
feels a little broken right now. So Humpty
Sure.
Dumptying this thing back together again, this is where Elias and specifically Hyde really show leadership to a bunch of young 21, 22-year-old guys and San Anthony Santander and Corbin Burns. They have a couple of grown-ups, mostly young guys.
No question. And even with the postseason experience that they gained last year, it was still limited and fleeting and unsuccessful. So, I mean, I'll say this much, just to, to put to bed that element of it, because then there is something else I want to talk to as it pertains to this club and the trade deadline. But, with the whole conversation conjecture about the clubhouse, do I think this team right now could benefit from another grown-up being added? And what I mean by that is just another veteran player who has been through it. Not a guy that's going to become the team leader, I think
What
that's a
the Scherzers
challenging
and the
thing.
Verlanders have
Sure.
been, they were expensive though, right? And only played
Sure.
every fifth day.
Well, yeah, and that's where I do think Zach Eflin, who has a reputation for being a great clubhouse guy, had a chance to meet him Sunday morning, made a good first impression with the local media. But I've heard even going back to his days in Philadelphia, I mean, this was a guy that was a team guy a couple years ago, ended up pitching out of the bullpen for the Phillies in that postseason, and still ended up earning a nice payday with the Tampa Bay Rays and acquitted himself well there. He was a sixth in Cy Young Award voting last year. Hasn't been quite as good this year statistically, but has still been the kind of guy who's going to take the ball, give you six innings. He doesn't walk people. Go look at his walk numbers. I mean, that's one thing that will be refreshing, you hope, watching him pitch here, not just in this Toronto series, but moving forward. And keep in mind, he's also under contract for next year.
And
But
let me say something else. Is he the most expensive pitcher in the history of the franchise?
In
Yeah, I think
ter
he
in,
might be.
yeah, in terms of on a 1 year, I mean, it's not a lucrative long-term commitment, of
We
course.
are where we are,
Yeah.
but he will make more money throwing a baseball for the Orioles next year. That's not talking this year.
Yeah.
Whatever happens is going to happen in the postseason. If he wins, he wins. But unlike Flaherty, unlike Burns, this is what we talked about. They have an opening day starter next year if they need one. If they need one.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not sure he's the opening day starter because Grayson Rodriguez, and we'll see where that goes. But the point is, he's in the top half of your rotation next year, right? He's at least a number two or number three for you next year if Corbin Burns doesn't come back. And the way it slots right now, Burns, Grayson Rodriguez, Zach Eflin are your top three, and then we'll have a question about who's four, Dean Kramer or someone else. But just the
But he
overall.
is it from the starting pitching. You don't expect them
I mean,
some sort of weird rental, but any rental they would have with you might as well throw Suarez out there.
yeah, well, I don't know about that. I still think Albert Suarez at this point, and I didn't think he was terrible on Sunday by any stretch of the imagination, and the defense and some weirdly placed soft contact that land found grass, that did happen some on Sunday, but I still think he'd be best in a bullpen role. I mean, frankly, the way Cole Irvin has pitched for the last 6 weeks, Albert Suarez moving into that role. I know it's a right-hander compared to a lefty. I wouldn't be opposed to something like that. So, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm ex not expecting another starting pitcher move. I mean, if I had to bet one way or the other, I'm probably going to lean no, but I think they're still talking. They're still looking. I think a new name that's kind of emerged late because he got off to such a bad start, but he's pitched really, really well the last few times out is Blake Snell. I think that's a whoever gets him, that's an intriguing acquisition there. He's got a player option for next year, so obviously that's a factor for any team. But to go back to Eflin for just a moment, one thing that I thought was interesting about the moves they made on Friday, one, the obvious being that they dealt from their major league roster in Austin Hayes in the Sir Anthony Dominguez trade. But they also, with the Eflin acquisition, they made a commitment beyond just a 1 year proposition. Now, it's it's some change and then next season, 2 months and then next season. But it's an $18 million commitment for 2025. It's not as though they won't have, it's not as though that represents a dramatic upgrade in payroll because Burns's money would be coming off the books, presumably Craig Kimbrel money coming off the books if you don't exercise the option there. But it still represents something that I'm not sure that's the kind of deal that would have been made under previous ownership. So
Fair enough. That needs
I
to be
don't.
said.
Yeah, and I don't, and I'm look, I'm not sitting here saying ready to throw a parade for Rubinstein
Well,
for that because
hang on a
it's
second.
not.
They've never really been in a position to ask John Angelos, do we want an $18 million starter next year? Usually it's off season. Let's go get a $10 million.
Yeah.
Let's go get a Kyle Gibson to figure it out in February. But to do this a year ahead of time, they've never been in a position to make
Well,
trade
they could.
deadline deals. They've never been good enough to go in that direction to get a starter next year.
But they could have done that last year. They could have done something like that. I mean, there are always guys out,
Well,
and
that was
this
the
is
Dylan
something.
Cease thing last year, probably as much as
Well,
anything.
but Dylan, but that was much more of a that was more much more of a prospect cost. What I'm talking about here is you can make moves and you can cast a wider net to add talent, and this is we've talked about this for several weeks leading into the
If you
trade
want to
deadline.
take on money.
If you're willing to take on some money, and look, no one's saying take on a $150 million contract necessarily, although certainly there are probably moves you can make if you're willing to do that. But generally speaking, teams that want to get rid of $150 million contracts is because a guy's not performing at a $150 million contract level. But I did find that interesting. But you know, the other part of this I want to talk about, and this ties into clubhouse culture, some of the conjecture that's been uttered over the weekend with the Austin Hayes comments, which again, I think were a massive nothing burger that fans took offense to that I didn't, I heard it and I don't understand, but it's the internet, right? I mean, nuance can be lacking in many circles, but I do think what's fascinating, and this came into focus on Sunday, two of the big names that have been mentioned about, in regards to the trade deadline, and two names that have been mentioned in terms of potentially being moved, Ryan Mountcastle and Cedric Mullins. Now, do either of these guys have a long-term future with the team? I think it's pretty evident at this point that that answer is going to be no. Cedric Mullins has one more year of club control and will be a free agent after 2025. Ryan Mountcastle, two more years. But Ryan Mountcastle, we know Coby Mayo is at AAA Norfolk. They have other guys who can play first base, including Ryan O'Hearn and Anthony Santander, depending on how you want to do things. But we saw on Sunday, Ryan Mountcastle and Cedric Mullins were the two biggest individuals responsible for them winning the game with a combined six RBIs. And in Mullins' case, a phenomenal catch in the top of the eighth inning that really, could have been a game-saving play. I mean, we don't know how it plays out after that, but it's a 6-5 game at that point in time. So I think if you're Mike Elias, and this ties into all of those questions about leadership and culture and veterans and, is the sky falling or not right now? And just, the overall vibes of a rough 5 weeks that they've had, where I do think it's, you're in a position where you have guys that, probably aren't long for the roster, but that doesn't mean that right now is necessarily the time to move on there. And look, 48 hours from now, we're going to have clarity on if any of these other veterans are gone or not. Right. But in the interim, you do question, okay, how much is too much in terms of turning things over to some of the younger guys? And, I don't say that to pick on anyone individually, specifically Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, who are the two best players on this team when everyone's healthy and going right and all that. But, you do look at this and say, do you want to turn over the roster that much? So that's where we look at this. And Sunday was a reminder of, okay, Austin Hayes wasn't really playing much anymore. But for the most part, Cedric Mullins, now he's not a 7 day a week player anymore, but he's still playing a lot. Ryan Mountcastle he's been lower in the order in recent weeks, and he hasn't been hitting over the last 5 weeks, maybe even longer than that if you go back and look at some of the numbers, but still in the lineup most nights. So that's where you look at this and say, look, I'm not opposed to trading those guys. You heard me start talking about the possibility of them dealing veteran players a month ago in terms of that might be a way to, kind of massage your roster churn that you don't want to deal all your prospects, but you can still get some talent for some guys that are going to be gone or potentially non-tendered or traded in the offseason. But at the same time, these are still veteran guys. These are still guys that are part of your clubhouse makeup and your chemistry and all of those buzz terms that we tend to use about teams that, it's difficult to quantify, but that doesn't mean it isn't there. That doesn't mean it doesn't matter. So I think my point is, if you're going to move a Mountcastle, if you're going to move a Mullins in addition to Hayes, and I don't think Mike Elias's goal is to deal all those fringe veteran guys at this point in time, but I think you got to be really careful in how you do it. I think you need to be careful in how you proceed, because if you just completely turn it over to the young core, especially counting on some guys like Coby Mayo, or I'll even throw Jackson Holliday into that category, who are completely unproven or haven't even gotten any major league experience, I think that's asking a lot. So we're going to see how it plays out. Look, if the right deal comes along, then sure, you do it. And I think in the case of Hayes, they got an upside rental reliever in Sir Anthony Dominguez, who Go look at his postseason numbers. Pitched lights out for the Phillies in October, the last couple of years. And they got Pache, who is not much of a threat with the bat at this point in time, and is a former top shelf prospect that didn't really pan out in the way that a couple teams envisioned him panning out. But great defender, good speed, and different position because he's an outfielder, but he might fill that Mateo October role, potentially pinch runner, defensive replacement, those types of things. Or he could be DFA'd in a few days if they end up adding another outfielder. But I still look at that and say, I would have wagered a pretty penny in saying I don't think Austin Hayes was going to be on the 2025 roster. I think he was probably more likely to be non-tendered or dealt in the offseason. So you ended up getting something for him, and you've cleared some of the logjam in the outfield in the process. Now, the young guy's got to step up. Colton Cowser, who the bat's woken up here over the last 10 days for him. So that's been good to say. It's good to see. They need to get Heston Kjerstad going again, post-concussion lists. It's been a little rough go of it for him. So anytime you're making these moves, you need other people to step up. But, I think it's a fascinating dynamic. And I think the trades that we saw on Friday, not even knowing what else could happen between now and Tuesday evening, but those moves we saw on Friday really signaled some shifting in approach for Mike Elias and this organization in terms of dealing an established veteran in one case. And then in the case of the Eflin acquisition, they dealt three prospects who promising, but certainly not their top shelf guys by any stretch of the imagination. And they take on some money, which, is something that we hadn't seen them do to this point in time. So did it move the needle dramatically for the World Series hopes? Time will tell. I'm not going to sit here and say Zach Eflin is, a stud ace pitcher, but he's been through it, and I think he's a good clubhouse guy, and I think he's a really high floor kind of, high command, dependable starter that is going to, at the very least, give them a number three starter in the postseason. And we'll see about Dominguez, who has at times been, even in the closer role for Philly a couple years back, at times hadn't been quite as good this year, but we'll see what a fresh start does for him. But it's fascinating. But forget about the trades for just a moment. They've got to get back to playing better baseball. And even Sunday's victory, there were still choppy elements that didn't leave you leaving the ballpark feeling all that much better than how you felt arriving on Sunday morning.
Luke's at the ballpark. Luke is in Owings Mills. I am checked out and into Ohio, but I'll be back on Tuesday before the trading deadline. We're going to be here all week long. Luke's going to be out on the interwebs. You can find us as per usual. And of course, Ravens camp heating up as well. We'll get some words on that a little later on. I did a whole lot last week with the business of baseball, where the franchise is, where Mr. Rubenstein's money would be, and an $18 million pitcher for next year as Luke pointed out on Friday and wrote at Baltimore Positive, a departure, just a departure. And these are new times. And this, the fact that everyone is zoned in on this trading deadline, zoned in on first place into the baseball team at a time when the football team's throwing the football around, and Lamar's had some health issues as well. We're a baseball town. It's almost August. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. Stay with us. We're BaltimorePositive.com.